con el under $3 menu de McDonald's, un McChicken es solo $1.50. Resulta que ser el héroe de tu primita solo te cuesta $1.50. Por un McChicken, good deal. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
Gavlik, who's unmarked as he streaks away into an open goal.
Hit the boundary line.
Oh, the post is broken. Matthews hit it.
Boy, oh boy, wow, wee. He shoots towards goal. What more can you say?
This is the Super Footy Podcast.
Welcome to the Super Footy Podcast brought to you by TAB. Who are you backing this weekend? My name's Lauren Wood. I'm joined, as I am every week, by Herald Sun Chief Footy Writer Mark Robinson, columnist John Anderson and Brian BT Taylor. Boys, it's going to be a massive, massive week, isn't it? Robbo, what are you looking forward to?
Oh, I think we've got a massive, massive day. We've got the tribunal. Had the tribunal last night. Got the tribunal tonight. I think, where do you sit on Tom Hawkins, Ando? Yes, 1 week.
I thought he was lucky to only get away with one. Could easily have been two. I reckon on Friday night when I saw it barge, my first thought was that's got two written all over it, which means he misses the grand final if Geelong happened to make it. So I would have thought privately Geelong probably as disappointed as they would be with what Tom did, because it's not Tom's nature. It's just not the way. It's not what the bloke's all about. It's an extraordinarily undisciplined thing for him to do.
I reckon he knows he's pretty lucky. I reckon Geelong know. I reckon he knows that they try and get out of the week. That's what everyone tries to do. But they would be relatively comfortable with a week, I would have thought.
Brian, you were known to have a temper.
Oh, come on.
You disagree with that comment?
Oh, it was spasmodic at its best.
Yeah, it only happened every Saturday. During the footy season, not at all off season, just footy seasons on Saturday.
We all know, the four of us, Lauren, Ando, BT and myself, we all know Tom. Some of us really well, some of us not. He's a beautiful soul, Tom, but he gets himself in situations on the field where he snaps and he makes really, really poor decisions when he's angry.
But dealt with it really well, accepted the tribunal's verdict, showed typical class after it, move on, Toby Green's next. I think most of us, Loz, feel that Toby Green doesn't have a case to answer.
I don't think so. I think it's good, sort of the inconclusivity of it seems to be the one. I mean, it has been talked about so much, and I'm interested to get your thoughts, boys, but the whole notion that it's to make up for last week, I don't think this was the one that they've gone wrong with. I think everyone would agree, and I would hazard a guess to say that even Michael Christian would agree that last week was the stuff up.
But you can't keep doing what he's doing every week.
No, you can't. That's the other issue, and that's what I'm keen to ask Brian about, because you obviously watch him so closely in a commentating point of view of what's he doing? That's the one thing, and I know so many people talk about Toby and he's such a great bloke and we love having him at the club and all this sort of stuff, but God, he just can't keep it up, can he?
No, look, he plays on the edge, but you can't judge this incident and be think cumulatively about it. It's an incident by itself, and I just don't. I'm sorry, but unless someone's seen some vision that I haven't seen, I still haven't seen the vision where it's conclusive, where it shows what they said he did. I just don't get it. I think I'm a little bit in the Wayne Carey party here. I think that there's a bit of a witch hunt on for Toby. Yes, he plays near the edge, and that's the way he plays. And Robbo mentioned before, you know, why does Tom do that? It's an edgy thing. We all know. We've all been in the battle of sport in some way, shape, or form. And when you get out there, you do stupid things without really thinking about it. Momentary lapses in concentration, that sort of thing. But so he's certainly got to tidy it up. But he's an edgy player, much more so than Tom Hawkins.
Just tell me this part, and Robbo and Loz. There's four teams playing on the weekend. GWS, who is the player you want to watch most play on Saturday afternoon?
Toby Green.
Toby Green.
For you, Brian, to call the footy, Toby Green. Robert, okay, we all agree on Toby Green. We'll go to Collingwood. Which Collingwood player do you want to watch the most on Saturday afternoon?
Probably, for me, De Goey.
If he was playing De Goey, but he's not playing, most likely.
Yep. Yep.
So I would say the bloke that I would love to see play on Toby Green, which is Braden Maynard.
Yeah, that duel in itself would be great. Yeah. Jaden Stevenson would be up there for mine. I love the way he plays football. Go to Geelong on Friday night against Richmond. Which two players?
Oh, Danger and Dusty by the length.
Is it as simple as that?
Yeah. Okay. One from all four teams, isn't there?
Disagree? I think so.
So what do we do about Toby? Robbo, you've been up to Sydney. You've spent time with Toby. We know the Giants are are angry about how the last couple of days has played out, and Brian used the word witch hunt, which has been thrown around.
Well, that's what the GW, that's what the Giants think. That there's a witch hunt.
So if he gets off
really
tonight,
this is really odd for me, because I got to Fox last night from the Herald Sun office, and people were looking at it and going, "Look there."
Where?
And I'm
where?
Looking.
Yeah, same.
What? And I'm thinking. I don't know. I said, "What? What are we looking at?" And they're going, "Oh, he's touched his face there." And I went, "Oh, okay. That brief touch is unnecessary contact to the face in a situation where three people are tackling him, trying to get him to hold the ball. I can't see him get rubbed out for that. But if he does, they're gonna scream conspiracy. The Giants, they are going to go crazy.
We could have another appeal on appeal.
At the tribunal, so they look at the incident. Forget about the history. They'll look at the incident, and no tribunal could do anything other than let him off based on the evidence that is there. We haven't got an umpire saying he didn't. We haven't got anyone else saying he did it, unless there's a medical report. I don't know. But they have to let him off on the evidence that will be presented tonight, because that video evidence is not categoric.
If not, do we see an Andrew Dunkley situation where it could go to a court?
Well,
yeah, you can.
Can that happen?
I love the theatre, so yeah,
I think
it does.
So. I'm not off the top. The way I know the Giants are feeling at the moment, they'll fight this. They'll fight this down every avenue they can possibly. What's the wording on the charge, Lauren?
The wording is unreasonable or unnecessary contact to the eye region. So
now,
what's an eye region?
Yeah, so Chris Fagan, the Lions coach, says he complained of being, he thought he might have got punched in the nose. Now, is the eye region, does that include the nose? And if you put your finger from the top of your nose to the eye, it's about 2.5 inches. Is that a region?
Well,
I don't know. I think it's going to get down to those sort of tin tacks.
I think that's probably the best part of it going to the tribunal. And I think it's probably what Michael Christian was trying to achieve last week with the serious misconduct charge, in that send it to the tribunal, let them thrash this kind of stuff out, and let's find out what is the definition of eye region, where is it. And I think the best part of tonight, which we didn't get last week because he pled guilty to the charge, is that Toby's actually going to have to get up and explain what on earth he was doing,
so
or alleged
should.
To
I know,
have done.
I like that.
Finally give his side of events, which we saw with, you know, the boot to Luke Dalhouse's face. He actually gets a chance to explain it.
Right, the tribunal starts at 5:30. What do you think will happen, Ando?
I think he'll get off. I hope he gets off. I'd love to see GWS play in the grand final. I think that's really important for football. Don't look at me with a smile on your face, because you know I may or may not have had a bet. That's got nothing to do with it. No, listen, I think it's really important for footy, the GWS, that one, Gold Coast is a basket case.
It'll be great for footy if they got to a grand final.
I know Collingwood supporters don't want to hear that, and it'd be good for Collingwood if they win a premiership. There's no problems with that.
Did you think I was smiling because I remembered that you put Jeremy Cameron into GWS in a bet at the start of the year?
Which, that's legal, isn't it? I'm allowed to say that.
Gamble responsibly.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, gamble responsibly. Yeah, exactly, Robbo, because you told
me. It's a great bet. Mate, Finnegan, I agree with you. If the Giants can get into a grand final, it'd be just wonderful for the competition. And wonderful for Leon Cameron.
For you, Brian, take your, I know you kicked 100 goals with Collingwood, but just as a football lover, the romance of it would be good for you to see GWS get in there?
Yeah, I want to see Toby Green play. I think he will. I think he'll get off. And, I do. I think Collingwood have got there quicker than they thought they would last year. This has been a bit of a follow-on. Haven't had their best team available for a good part of the year. Be great to see GWS get in. I'd have no problem with them winning at all.
Just throw one at you. Normally, head-to-head rivalries in footy these days, we don't worry so much about how they turn out, because it just doesn't affect the game, because it's played as a team collective. Brodie Grundy v Shane Mumford, to me, has mismatch written all over it, based on what Stephen Martin did to Shane Mumford on Saturday night, where Mummy was reduced as an ineffective spoiler, giving away unnecessary free kicks, couldn't keep up with him. That's going to be harder at the MCG. How do you all see that particular duel, and how important is it?
I think they'll sit down and first thing they'll say is, can we play Dawson Simpson? That's the first question.
Fair income.
And then the second one will be, could Adam Tomlinson go run around with him around the ground? And we play mummy, and then we go,
Adam Tomlinson is 193 centimetres. Played there before.
So just get mummy to do the tap work.
It's a bit more complicated. It's a bit more complicated than that because that means you're sending another person to the stoppage who's going to run with Brodie Grundy. Now, that makes Munford a bit ineffectual. That'll throw up all sort of mechanical problems elsewhere on the ground if they do that. Do they do a Sean Grigg and just ruck Tomlinson and give away the tap out and not play Shane Munford?
Sean Grigg played a quarter of the game at most as a relief ruckman for Toby Nankervis. You're talking about Tomlinson going in as the main opponent to Brodie Grundy.
Chris Judge said on Channel 9 last night, and I couldn't agree with him more. He said, I think there's more of a risk playing Shane Munford than not playing him. He was so poor last week, and Brodie Grundy on the big MCG.
Grundy's going to run him off his feet. Look, he's going to take him forward. He's going to have three goals on him to half time.
It could be a game changer, a game winning decision. I really don't know the answer, but I think they're going to be having a lot of discussion about it.
Well, we'll revisit it a little bit later on because we'll unpack everything about these two prelim finals. Just keen to get your views on a few other issues before we get to that, guys. Obviously, news this morning surrounding Essendon's planned succession. I know it's been talked about in recent weeks, Robbo, but do they ever really work? We've got sort of, it's shaping, you know, John Worsfold into Ben Rutten. This will be the last year, the way that it's sounding at the time of recording. How do you see it playing out?
I think it's been very strange, the entire Essendon situation. Half of me thinks that they wanted to get rid of John. Maybe financially they couldn't. So they said, oh, we'll keep it for another year. Life doesn't plan out like that. Life can't be planned. What happens if John Worsfold, in his role next year, and it might be a diminished role, takes Essendon to a grand final or a premiership? Mm. You're stepping aside now, John. We've got Ben Rutten in. And how do they...
another Malthouse situation.
Yeah, it is. It's the Kirribilli all over again. Now, John might have put his hand up and said, yeah, no, I agree to this. That's great. But things change.
When has it worked? I remember going back with David Park and
Wayne
Britton. Didn't work at all. Going back to probably Gary Ayres took over from Malcolm Blight. Easy took Geelong into a grand final, but ultimately didn't win a premiership. Probably Alan Joyce and Alan Jeans. When Alan Jeans got sick, Lauren, going back a long time ago, 31 years ago.
That was an emergency more than...
Yeah, it was. Alan Joyce was there, but he came in.
Jonglomai, Paul Roos.
Yep, fair call. That's a good one.
That's the one. Absolutely, it's worked. Yep. John left Roos left and John took the Swans.
But the circumstances were perfect for that. If the circumstances don't end up being perfect, you don't know at the time of appointment. It's a year later, as you say, anything can happen. And, if Worsfold's got them right on the edge and, you know, let's say they play in a prelim final next year or they finish top six and win a final, people then be going, why are we getting rid of this guy? We just won a final. We've reached top four or top five or top six. You know, it seems stupid to do it. So much can change. And I reckon it's a pretty likely scenario that could happen.
Yeah, I'll give you a flip side. Essendon are 1-6.
Mm.
Right? And everyone will be talking about it. Well, what's the point of keeping John Worsfold on? Yeah. You've got the succession plan. They're 1-6. Just make the move now. I mean, it does open the door to some calamity out there. There's no doubt about that. But why keep him on from the year? It's either... they don't think Ben Rutten's ready yet because they would give it to him now. They didn't want to pay John out. He had a year contract. But it's very rare in AFL for a club to announce this guy's coaching to this end date and that's it.
So would you then, open question to everyone, they're about to announce, as we record this, they're about to announce the plan and we're assuming that they're all going to sit there and say all the right things and that it's all very amicable and all the rest of it. But if you're Fremantle, obviously Walsh is from Perth or Adelaide, where he has been previously.
He's from Freo, actually.
Originally. Do you pick up the phone today?
If you want him to coach, you do.
Yeah, well...
simple as that. I mean, do you want him to coach? They haven't shown an inclination so far, Freo, and we... we just assume that Longmuir is the favourite for that job.
And if Worsfold hasn't already been spoken to by Fremantle, he ain't coaching Fremantle.
Yeah, no.
It's fickle.
Yeah, he wouldn't be there just for the 1 year because he'd take four or five over there.
Yeah, that's right.
My thoughts were that Ross Lyon still on the shelf. I would have gone after John, absolutely no doubt. But that's what's going to happen. They're announcing it today. You know, I've just put on the website there that Essendon are really, really, really keen to bring Dean Solomon back to the football club in an assistant coaching role. They've brought Carousella back, so this doesn't happen per chance. They've said, righto, we've got to improve our football department. We've got to progress our football department. And part of it is bringing back some premiership players to instill a bit of Essendon. Because a lot of Essendon people think after the Herd Bomber situation and after the Sheedy left, a lot of Essendon people got pushed out. Neil Craig was there. Mark Neal was there. John Worsfold came over and did a terrific job in fixing a broken club. I think a few Essendon Coterie Group members and some influential people said, hey, let's get some Essendon people back here. Mark Harvey will stay. So the coaching group will be pretty strong flavour Essendon.
Is it also kind of a way of hiving away Ben Rutten a little bit? It's only days after Don Piker stepped down.
He's an Adelaide champion, Ben Rutten. They have to have looked at him and thought this bloke wants to coach. The Raps, I know a bloke who played at Essendon this year. He gave a massive rap to Ben Rutten in a private conversation. I can't say his name, but he'd been in another club, so he had experienced different coaches, and he said he's ready to go.
You'd have to have something in writing if you're Ben Rutten and you're going to stay.
Yeah.
You know, because there's too many other opportunities out in the coaching world right now for him to go and attack. So he would have to definitely have something in writing, and I'm assuming that's why they've done what they say they're going to do.
Because jobs may be available next year. I mean, Ken Hinckley at Port Adelaide, tenuous. Mm. If they don't have a good year, Ken himself has said, I'll be gone. He understands that. Other jobs, I mean, it's not beyond the realms of possibility. Chris Scott, Chris's contract until the end of 2021.
He would only walk away. He would walk away. The club wouldn't sack him, I think. He'd walk away.
With the current management there, with Brian Cook and Colin Carter, they've always been very supportive of Chris.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really curious, this Ben Rutten situation. I had someone at Essendon tell me, you know, tell all your media mates just to chill out on Ben Rutten. It's getting blown out of all proportion what a genius he is. He said he's really popular. He's got all the buzzwords of the modern young coach. He's empathetic, he cares, and he's really good to talk to. He's got great relationships. He knows his footy. But they said just chill out. Just chill out on the exposure. And now they've appointed him as their successor.
I couldn't agree more. I agree, totally.
What about, it seems like it was the biggest week of footy news that I think you said in 10 years last week, Robbo, that we had. The obvious other big one was Willy Rioli. Now, there's so much to obviously play out for him, and nothing happens quickly with Asada, but hasn't it taken a turn over the last sort of 24 hours with Peter Sumic and Adam Simpson's come out this morning and had a little Peter and
so we should.
It's really escalated, hasn't it? As a kind of aside from Willie, as a wider kind of West Coast conversation.
But you'd be entitled to be filthy if you're
absolutely
Adam Simpson, because Peter Simic has basically said there's more to the party than Willie Rioli. Well, based on what? Yeah, well, you've got to have some evidence if you're going to fly that kite.
Like Pete, sue him. I'd sue him. How dare you? Who in the hell do you think you are? Yeah, I thought he's got the Fremantle job and he's throwing grenades. That's the first thing I thought. He's got the job.
Or he missed the West Coast job to Adam Simpson.
I think he might have done that. I thought it was a very odd thing to say. And I think Adam Simpson and any coach would defend their football club Adam Simpson did.
Just going back to the Rioli thing a week ago when it happened, I just wonder if the club, I don't know whether the club had done this, but you know when he muffed that test and substituted all that sort of thing. If I were the club, I would have gone that day or the next day and done a test, a private test, to clear him of what they were testing him for.
Don't think it matters. I think once he's done what he did, was the substitution. The starter don't see it that way, but it's a world stage. They forget this little tishpot competition called the AFL. We don't care about that type of thing at all.
Shitpot.
No, but
tishpot. I changed it.
But then the argument that he's trying to place in that he panicked, you know, is more real. If you do a test on the same day for the same test,
haven't they done that? Didn't they do a blood test which showed he was clear of anything?
Clear of everything.
That's one suggestion.
Clear of illicit drugs, I think they said in that blood test. I don't think they said clear of performance-enhancing drugs, did they?
You might be right.
Illicit only. Then. So I would have gone and got the performance-enhancing one done as well, so that at least you have if it gets down to the point where you can appeal or whatever, at least you can appeal on some grounds that this is a young kid that panicked. He clearly had no drugs. He wasn't hiding from drugs. He just panicked. Because if you've done the test, the same test that they do on the same day, then he's clear.
Well, this is where...
There's such a balls up.
Where it's going to, I think, and the West Coast chairman came out and said it the other day, it'll completely change the process, you would think, over there, if not everywhere. In that players are allowed to take someone in with them to maybe, you know, kind of diffuse the situation. He's starting to get a bit frustrated, can't produce a sample, bit dehydrated. You know, we see it in all sports.
It's bad luck. It's just the nature of sport.
With ASADA, we know that it's black and white, and I understand what you're saying, Ando. That's the way they work. Certain types of people work for ASADA, and that's the way they work. But people were saying, why don't we make our own rules? Well, we've committed because, you know, government funding and all of that through money. Building of stadiums and a whole host of other things. We need all that money. So we need the government funding. There's no doubt about that. You know, but it just makes you wonder why ASADA can't adjust, because at the moment we are in a system of Olympic and Commonwealth Games. This ASADA, the body, has been designed around four-year competitions, and we are not a four-year competition. We are a daily competition that happens daily.
But there are...
And I think they need to change it for the sports that aren't on a 4-year cycle.
I couldn't agree less with you.
Yeah, me too.
ASADA has to have a hard
I'm
and fast
with you.
Rule.
I'm with
so
you,
that's
Ando.
Why you have drug education for Willie Rioli and everyone else who comes into our competition. They have to sit down and learn from their club and the testers what it involves. If they can't learn that, then they run the risk. And it's a hard and fast. It's no negotiation, Barge. Simple as that.
Because imagine people have used...
No, you've missed my point. I'm not... I just said to you before, I prefaced it by saying, I know ASADA are black and white, right? And they are. And they are the rules of the moment. So Rioli's going to suffer under those. I simply think it should be adjusted because at the moment, these whole rules of ASADA are around catching Olympic athletes.
But there is room for him to move. There's a court of arbitration he can go to. And over the journey, we've seen people... We've seen 4 years become 2 years. We've seen 4 years become no years. It has happened, if he can argue his case. So there is an area for him down the track. But at the moment, it ain't looking all that good.
One question. I'm a little bit with BT, not totally. Is 4 years too long for a guy who was tested for blood and will be... Say there was no drugs in him whatsoever. No performance and no illicit.
Yes, it is.
4 years is far too long for a young man who panicked.
I don't expect him to get 4 years if he can prove that he had nothing in his system.
And they'll be able to prove that.
He can go to a court of arbitration.
Yeah.
There is an opportunity for him. Let's move on.
I don't think it's... I would agree. I think everyone agrees that it's
really
4 years. But we can't expect footballers to be treated any differently to a Russian shot putter or a Chinese swimmer. I think that's just...
We're going to call you Mr. Move On.
Well,
I talked about Tom Morgan's before. He said, move on, Toby Green. Why do you want to move on?
Because I want to talk about the footy.
Right.
Talk about Friday
That's
night.
It. We're moving on. I want one answer, one word only. This time next week as we sit here, we will have a Brownlow medalist. Robbo, we'll start with you. Who will it be?
Patrick Dangerfield.
Ando?
Nat Fyfe, Patrick Dangerfield. Ty. There you go, Loss.
Like it, BT?
Lockie Neal.
In fact, I reckon...
I said one word!
Ty. Definitely Ty. And it could be Neil, Bottom, Pelly, those of Cripps, one of those. But there's so many good candidates this year who are going to poll so heavily. Definitely a Ty.
Yep. Danger in Cripps for me. Let's get to the games.
High ball, Harry Taylor there. Off hands. Dalhouse along the ground. They lead it by 19 points. West Coast need to kick 4 goals to win.
Ablett, well done. Menegola. They've got the monkey off their back. They're into the prelim.
Berry's got it. There's your sire and the Giants. Are through to a prelim final, and have a look at Leon Cameron and his coaching staff. What a game of football.
All right, let's kick it off Friday night. Tigers v Geelong. We've mentioned Tom Hawkins before. He is out. Andrew, what do they do? They said they've made the decision, Chris Scott, this morning. The players know who it is. We don't. Who's your pick?
I think they pick James Parsons because of his run. Because as much to do with Mitch Duncan being out of the side, you don't pick a tall to replace a tall if the tall's not good enough. So you don't pick Darcy Ford from the very first obscurity.
Not playing.
You don't pick Harry Taylor to suddenly go forward or Lockie Anderson to come in the side. You pick your best 22 players, then you adjust accordingly in a team fashion. I think James Parsons will play for Geelong.
Buzzer's not playing.
No, Ford's as much playing. As I love Buzz the, not playing. The not thought playing. Of the bloke named Wiley Buzzer featuring in a prelim final.
Gary Rowan, no chance?
He trained this morning, from what we understand, BT, and in the frame to play. Mitch Duncan obviously will only play if he's in a grand final.
Gary Rowan, who was so integral in Geelong's first half when they went 11-1, against Collingwood, was just could not influence contests when Darcy Moore and Jeremy Howe were taking uncontested marks.
Well, I know what you're getting at. He's not a finals, great finals player, but and he performed poorly and looked soft and all of those things.
I've got no confidence in Gary Rowan coming in, BT.
Surely you give him another go, don't you?
I think they put Superman down there. I think they move him.
For more time? Superman in terms of Dangerfield?
In danger. I think they start him.
Against?
Start him in the middle, and he drifts forward. He does a dusty. He just plays a dusty role. When he's needed in the midfield, which will be a lot, to be a centre-bounce player, and then drift forward. Parfitt played forward last week. Kelly played a lot more forward than he has in any game this year. Righto, you guys.
Which makes Radicalea such a key
Radicalea
component.
Radicalea is the most important player.
Hit the ball really hard the other night. I mean, you were calling it Barge in the last quarter. He played really well before then. Twice he hit it, I reckon you said, he's so close to grabbing those marks. They're on pretty hard leads. But importantly, he brought the ball down in front of the pack, which was so...
He doesn't slow down at contact, does he?
No, but those players around him, Atkins and Ablett and these blokes, Dalhouse, they know the ball was coming down to them. And Brian, I know you called that really well, I thought, too, the other night. So.
All right, well, Richmond will win. Let's move on.
Well, don't you know the move on capabilities is only reserved
there's
for
one just,
like, this
no,
one for
just
Brian.
One more on Dangerfield. Richmond doesn't tag. Okay.
They have a collective.
They have a collective midfield group. So the temptation is for Chris Scott to say, let's leave Dangerfield in the midfield. So if he doesn't get tagged, because Yo got him on the weekend in the first half and he shone, the temptation of leaving Dangerfield in the midfield to do what Dangerfield does without a tag is really exciting.
And Geelong does tag. So Guthrie, you think, goes to Dustin Martin as he did a couple of years ago. And then when Martin goes forward, probably Tom Stewart. So that's a really interesting scenario in itself. Mm. Geelong to win and win well.
What about, Brian, just a quick one. Obviously, this, you know, Tim Kelly could, well, looking more and more like he will leave at the end of the season. Ablett, whether he goes on. Do you reckon this could be their last legitimate shot at a flag, Brian, with this group?
No, I reckon they've got enough coming through to be able to get by after those guys. And if they pick up another one or two, if they were to pick up a Jack Stephen or someone to go with that group next year, I reckon they'd be back in the hunt again.
Sean
so,
Higgins.
Yep, Sean. Well, didn't he re-sign?
Re-signed this morning, unfortunately.
Yeah, re-signed. I was dreaming.
He said that's regretted.
Jack
Stephen's a good chance. He sounds like he's a really good chance. And they sounds
get his,
like...
He's got to get his life together. Got to get his life together if he's going to, if he's going to produce the sort of football that we know that Jack can produce. I mean, he'd be a great pickup, Jack, for any team at his best.
What about?
I just want to know about Ablett first of all, Ando. Is he going to retire or not? It seems that he is to me. If I were a guessing man, I would say that even though he's got a little bit more in the tank, I just feel and I watch him and I think about what Chris Scott would be thinking of him. He's been brilliant. I've loved him. And I've loved him this year, the different game that he's played. But I think he's thinking of retirement. That's the way I read it.
I spoke to Gary 2.5 weeks ago, Brian. He was 99.9% sure he would play on next year.
Really?
Unequivocal about it at the time. But things can change. You can play two finals and there's a different pressure, different speed. And he may be not satisfied with what he's done. Now, I would have thought his output on Friday night tackling wise, pressure wise, was what a small forward should do. He had five tackles. He missed two goals that he should have kicked. That would be the difference. Yep. And he gave one off, actually, which was unusual to Tim Kelly in the last quarter because he was lacking a little bit of confidence. But I would still expect Gary to play next year. Certainly that's what he wants to do.
Quick one for you, Robert.
No, my issue with Gary is if he has another poor final, that's three poor finals. Yeah, so the Cats then run him for another 22 weeks. Where he'll be, what, approaching 37 or 36? What is he now, 35?
35, 36, halfway through next year.
Right, so he'll be 36 and a half before we get to next September.
Yep.
And they're going to hope a year on that Gary's going to turn around in finals.
Finals can change everything. If Geelong has a bad final on Friday night, that can change
absolutely
all sorts of thinking.
He needs a big final.
I would say at the moment, Brian, Gary is playing footy next year and he wants to play footy next year.
Right.
What about Chris, Robbo? You see him, Chris Scott, you see him a hell of a lot through AFL 360.
Same on
he
Monday
spoke
nights.
He spoke on Tuesday morning, so just before we came in here to record. Very, very prickly. Had one journo in particular in his sights, and made comments about
who was the
stop
journo?
Staring at me and along those lines. Journo from AFL.com named Mitch Cleary, from what I understand.
The Maasai Warrior.
Have you noticed? You saw him last
have
night.
Have I noticed Mitch Cleary staring
at
Chris Scott?
Have you noticed Chris
haven't.
Scott? You saw him. He was 12 hours before this happened. Is he fine. Nervous?
He's a bit combative, but I think all these nutcase coaches are combative.
Nutcase coaches.
And I say that in its respect. You've got to be combative. He arrived at 360. His key player, one of his key players, Tom Hawkins, has just been suspended. There's pressure on everyone in all elements of life. In football, preliminary final weekend, he just loses Tom Hawkins.
Another key player, Mitch Duncan's not playing.
Duncan's not playing. So he sits down, and we're talking about it, and he's frustrated, very frustrated. And afterwards, something was said. Nothing bad happened, but I saw the competitive nature in him. And it wasn't between us. Something was said about someone else, and I saw the look on his face.
Hey, Robert, he's a Scot.
Yeah.
They go hard, the Scott boys. That's their nature.
Clearly they've woken up this morning and is not happy with some journo looking at him.
That'll That's make unusual, though. I've never heard that one before.
That'll make the news tonight, Brian.
Yeah, it will.
Thanks for your... Well, let's move on then.
Let's move on.
Collingwood GWS, all the shades, really, of 2 years ago, doesn't it? A big Melbourne club. GWS travelling to the MCG for a twilight final. What would they have learned, Ando?
I've tipped GWS confidently in both finals.
Yep.
Probably incorrectly because they just got over the line the other night. The Mumford Grundy thing, I just can't get out of my head, Loz. So yep. I think I'd love to see them make it, but I think Collingwood beat them.
Would they have learned anything, Brian, from it, though? Yeah, the 99% crowd against them, MCG rocking factor?
They would have learnt from the finals over the last couple of weeks that they can't play soft, non-competitive, fluffy, outside.
Nice.
Well, they've gone so far to the other end of the spectrum, haven't
football
they?
If so they are should. Going to win finals. They can't play like they did at various times during the year, and they have to play like they did last week if they want to win finals. So if it looks like they've committed to that, it looks like they're capable of that over a short period of time. Whether we can see it as the pressure ramps up higher and higher, because Collingwood, I reckon out of the teams that are left, Collingwood are probably the toughest, the most physical team that are left. So they're going to be tested in that area big time when they play them.
I think they should sacrifice one of their forwards, whoever Moore picks up. I reckon Howe will go to Jeremy Cameron. Cameron likes going up the ground. I think they like to keep Moore deep. Whoever gets more, I'd move him out. I'd take some space. I'd go out towards, not go and stand on the boundary line, but I would go and find
Himmelberg
space.
Or Finlayson, they can move.
No doubt.
They're both good movers.
No doubt. And so that leaves the third defender to go with either Himmelson or Himmelberg.
Finlayson or Himmelberg.
What did I say? Himmelson.
They sound like mountains.
Move on, Ando. Move on.
Mount Himmelberg.
I think I thought it was a bruising game. Lockie Whitfield, who Ando wrote recently, I think, could he possibly be the best player in the game? And I think it's a really good discussion point. He had a bad back. He couldn't run on the weekend. He could not run. So
And didn't he let us know?
He did go down a little bit easy when he got that little tab.
Let us know.
There you go.
What do you think when you see players like that, Brian?
I think, why are you doing that? We don't need to know. You just walk off the ground if you're no good and leave us none the wiser and sort it out. And, yeah, that was just a bit weird to me. But
they need him. They need him this week. They need him against the Collingwood team. And Matt DeBoer, God, it's already a discussion. Where does he go to?
Who's the one?
Jordan Lewis reckons he should go to Taylor Adams because he's the inside midfielder. A couple of boys on Fox last night said, no, he's got to go to Scott Pendlebury. I don't think he's going to go to Adam Treloar. I don't think he's not going to go to Adam Treloar. And side bottom is probably going to be Sam Reed on the wing. So I think they're in it. I think they're in it. I really do, the Giants. I might tip them.
Hope you're right.
I might wait and see what happens at the tribunal on Tuesday night because I think Toby's such a barometer for
if
them.
If Toby's out there, I don't think they can win. Didn't play last week, they wouldn't have won.
They need Jeremy Cameron. When he plays well in finals, they play well. And if Toby's not there, he's going to have to play twice as well, isn't he? But can't wait. Either way, we'll be here to recap it with you boys this time next week.
Matthew Hogg goes long to Whitnall. 50 metres from goal. This youngster, who's kicked 52 goals for the season. And if he can kick another one here and put them 8 points up with 4.5 minutes left, gee, the minor premiers will have a job to snatch this game.
Who's on Kuda?
He's not happy about the distance. He's looking for some options. He's looking for something other than to kick for goal. Might have no choice. It starts right. It swings back. What a goal! Oh, you'd want to be on the Blues now.
We're joined by the birthday boy this week. Of course, the fantastic coaching great that he is, David Parkin. Of course, Wednesday, September 18, as this podcast goes to air, Robbo, it marks 20 years to the day that Carlton beat Essendon in that 99 prelim. Parko, it's great to have you with us. Take us back there. I suppose the 20 years has probably gone in the blink of an eye, has it?
Yeah, it's a sad thing. It's the only thing that Carlton people remember, isn't it, in the last 20 years? It's been was 25 now, I guess, if the 95 was the last time they played and won a grand final. It's been a long time in the wilderness, as we say. Maybe the road ahead looks a bit more fruitful, I'm not sure. Yeah, but look, it was an unbelievable time, as you probably work out. We were a bit lucky to get there. I think we failed to beat Brisbane. I think Brisbane, in fact, beat us. Might have been following Richmond the night that the night the scoreboard caught on fire at the MCG. We played Richmond in that game, and they weren't all that good, and they beat us by 4 goals. And then we had to go to Brisbane the next week. I think we got beaten by 15 or 16, and for some fluky reason, we were still in it. And we had West Coast coming from Perth, obviously, where we'd always done well over there and against them. So we cleaned them up in the, whatever it was, qualifying final, which gave us an opportunity to play Essendon, who were our strongest foe, not only Sheedy and Parkin, but the two clubs, I think. And then we had this phenomenal game, as it turned out, for a preliminary final. And it was unexpected, and we got to the point where we were going to lose, but by some exceptional things, we managed to fall in by a point.
It's quite amazing, Parko, because that first game, you lost to Brisbane by 73 points. Okay.
Was it 73?
73 points, and then you come out in the turnaround and played West Coast, and you won by 54. And then, of course, you beat the Bombers by a point. Looking back on that game, and it was a famous day, and you've spoken about it 100 times, was there a move? Was there a positioning of a player on a certain player? Was there something that you did that took away a strength of Essendon that maybe hasn't got the accolade or the attention that it should have?
Well, Robert, the one thing that we should understand is that I wasn't. We'd already put a succession plan into place, and I can put man up and take kudos and know what I know anything about it. But by that time, Wayne Britton was totally in charge of match day. People don't believe, but that's in fact the succession plan went over 3 years, a bit like I hear down here that Essendon are putting into place at the moment, which John Kennedy did for me, that very few people know of back in the 70s. And it's becoming, I think, a smart thing to do. It does, we do it in every other organisation in the country. Why shouldn't it happen in Australian football? And Wayne Britton was, in fact, in charge of that technically, tactically and every other way. And other than the one that most people remember, I'm getting old and forgetful these stages, but we did start well. There's no doubt we did that. We had a couple of exceptional individual efforts, one by Fraser Brown in putting on one of the tackles of the century that is remembered, which enabled us to save the game at that stage. But there is no doubt, and if you talk to Anthony Koutafidis, he badgered both Wayne as a coach, but he was badgering me as a bloke who thought he had something to offer. And I guess moving him firstly into the middle and then secondly into the forward line probably enabled him to do what he can do at an exceptional mark, and the goals he kicked at that stage probably, and it's well known. I can't come up with anything that was significantly different in terms of a placement of a player or a tactic we use at some stage. We were hanging on for grim death, and at the finish, pretty fortunate to win. And as you know, the historical rivalry between Carlton and Essendon, who both sit on 16, I think, still sit on 16 premierships, and were hoping to outdo the other one. It probably lives more in Carlton people's memories than some of the more successful sides of earlier eras, in fact.
You talked about not moving players around too much, David, other than obviously letting Kuda loose like you did. But am I right that you played Glenn Manton in the forward line to start that game?
Yeah, that's my memory serves me right. And I think you've done your homework. I think that's absolutely right. We're playing him, as they often do, as a what we call them, defensive forwards these days, a lock-on defensive forward. And I'm trying to think of his opponent. You'll probably come up with which we did that. Glenn being an ex-Essendon player that we were able to secure, did a remarkable job. I remember reading it the other day. Did a remarkable job. I think he actually ended up playing at both ends of the ground, but doing an exceptional job. So we had, you know, we had a remarkable group of players who had the capacity to be what's called versatile, as we do. We're not doing so much of it these days. Who did specific roles. I remember Matthew Hogg doing a job at the same time on that particular day. Not a great performer over a period of time, but was able to lock down and do a job. So, Glenn's sort of a person who doesn't get much, recognition for his role.
Hey.
Yeah, he was terrific player, very coachable player.
Right, Parker, you said something before that I wasn't aware of. That John Kennedy set up a succession plan for you at Hawthorn. Were you captain? How long had you stopped playing?
No, I went to Perth. You might know this, but after whenever it was, I retired in 74. I was playing coach of the reserves in 74. Did play a few games for the seniors because we had injuries. 75 went to WA and coached Subiaco from top to bottom, which is not real easy to do. Came back in 76 as John's assistant. You won't know, but his young son was pretty ill. I basically coached the team in 1976, which they won the premiership. He handed me his role. I'll never forget it to this day. We were training at Stradbroke Park in Kew in preparation for the 77 season. We were well into February by that stage. And as I was getting the car, he came over and put his hand on my shoulder. He said, "Oh, by the way, you'll be announced as coach of the Hawthorn Club tomorrow." And I was, without prior knowledge from John, no interview from anybody. John handed me his job in 1977. He remained as, I think, chairman of the match committee. He remained to support me through 77. We ran third. And I went to him gently and suggested it might be time that I did it on my own, shook me by the hand, wished me well, and we won the premiership in 78. So that's a story that very few people know. But he certainly gave me an enormous amount. I prepared the team, did all the training and preparation in 76. when they actually won the premiership. So I guess I'd done my duty and done my interview, if you like, by that season's work. And he was good enough, loved the man for it, and gave me the opportunity to coach at senior VFL level on the back of that work that I'd done in 1976.
Great story. Did the Parkin Britain succession plan work?
Well, in a sense, it didn't. It didn't. I'm sure because we had at that stage, Robbo, the we had three. I had three assistants, of course, Ross Lyon and John Worsfold were both there at the same time as Wayne. Over that same period, when I was preparing Wayne, I thought Wayne was a bloke technically and tactically the best coach I've ever worked with, without doubt. But because the job, as you two both know, the job is particularly today far more than a coaching job. It's a management job. It's a whole club management thing. You represent the club. I think Wayne would be, he'd be first to admit that he did well technically and tactically in coaching the side on a weekly basis. I think what he had difficulty with, didn't enjoy, don't think was all that good at, was the public role of being coach of the Carlton Football Club, which unfortunately or fortunately, whichever way you look at it, needs someone who can represent the club in the public domain, which wasn't, I guess, Wayne's strength. So he was sacked and I wasn't there at the time, so I can't really say exactly why, but he certainly didn't do any worse than the people that followed him.
You've obviously then been in both sets of shoes then, haven't you, obviously, as the as the mentor and the protege. What do you have any advice for John? Obviously, you know him quite well. He served as an assistant to you. An advice for John as, I guess, the mentor in this situation, but also for Ben Rutten as the protege as it's shaping up at Essendon? Because I imagine it's a fine balance for both.
Being aside, not being a smarty here, but John and I, we meet every 6 months because we both captained separately and coached separately our clubs to premierships. Very few people know that, and we've remained good mates. We meet every 6 months. It's our own exclusive club that nobody else is a part of. And John and I have talked about these issues often from the point of view of being a the person who's being mentored to the person who's doing the mentoring. And it one thing that John is the most open and honest guy that I reckon I've ever had the privilege of working with. And as long as you have that sort of capacity to have the conversations and have them regularly, then, and you've got a really good personal and professional relationship with the person. I don't know about that with Rutten and Worsfold, but certainly in my case with John Kennedy, and in my case again on the other way around with Wayne Britton, it was one of those associations where you could say anything honestly and openly and have a vigorous conversation at any time. If you can't have that, it can't work. And I'm sure that, well, I don't know Ben, but I know John well enough to know that he's capable of having that kind of conversation.
Brilliant. All right. Well, we appreciate you joining us, David. We understand you're helping out a mate today, so you better get back on the tools.
Oh, he's preparing lunch for me now. He's doing the right thing.
Oh, so good.
Young flies up and marks it, so the Bombers aren't out of it yet.
They want to
Barry
it
Young,
it's about
75 from
go.
Goal. Will anyone be the hero? Alessio 39, Lloyd, no mark. Rice kicks it away. Rice kicks it away. Mark down there by Wallace. Wallace is gone. They're going to win, Carlton.
Murphy's going to win now.
Carlton are going to win. Carlton against all the odds are going to be in the grand final.
We're joined as we are every week by Jared Duffy from The Tab. Who are you backing this weekend? If you are having a bet, do so responsibly. Jared, two massive prelim finals starting Friday night, Richmond v Geelong.
Well, it is, Warren, and of course, there's no margin for error here. It's pretty simple. You lose and you're out, and punters have sided with both favourites this week. Now, Richmond were short anyway. They've got a fair bit shorter since Tommy Hawkins lost his case at the tribunal. So they're into $1.35 now. Geelong out to $3.30. We've got a line there of 18.5 points. And as I said, all the money momentum is definitely with Richmond there. And that's carried through to Saturday's game as well. We quite often find this when the Giants are on the road, particularly when they play a good side in Melbourne. Punters desert them, and that's been the case here. They've been $1.54, $1.50 into $1.44 now, the Pies. The Giants are out to $2.80, and we've got a handicap line there of 14.5 points.
I would imagine there could be a bit of movement over the next day or two as well with that tribunal, Toby's tribunal looming. It could shape that market even further. What about the Brownlow? I know we've tracked it all year, but there's only a few more sleeps to go. Is Danger still the one?
Actually, it's a good point you make on the Giants. If you think that he's going to go out, they'll probably get to a shorter quote. The GWS, it's just not a side that if they lose a player, punters drop off. Anyway, the Brownlow, yeah, we've had some significant changes to the market here. Dangerfield, the favourite at 275. He has been since the final round. We know that he came in a blaze of glory the last three rounds. Bontempelli, very well backed, second favourite, 550 into $5. Lockie Neal, he's a drifter, 550 out to $6. Nathan Fife is adrift at 6 out to 7. Then we've got Paddy Cripps, 11. Brodie Grundy, quite popular at $15. Adam Treloar, not so much at 21. Then we've got two players at $26, Tim Kelly, Jackson McRae. I know we touched on this last week, Lauren, but interesting to note that for the major portion of the season, Paddy Cripps and or Tim Kelly were the favourites. They completely dominated the market up until about four or five rounds to go. As I said, they're $11. And $26 now, but plenty of money for Dangerfield. Apart from the Brownlow medal itself, we've got dozens and dozens of bet types open on the Brownlow. Most team votes, you can back a player top 10, top 5, head-to-heads, etc. And the medal itself, the market remains open throughout the count. So there's actually live betting on the Brownlow next Monday night.
It's always the way, isn't it? Players have a good final and people suddenly jump on them for the Brownlow, even though there's no votes on offer in the finals.
Yeah, I think that's part of the reason why we see continued support for Dangerfield and, to a lesser degree, Brodie Grundy. It happens every year. Yeah. Every year it happens.
Always the way. We're so predictable, aren't we? What about the flag? I would imagine the Tigers, they've had the week off. They're shaping up beautifully.
Well, they are. You'd think that the cards are all falling their way, particularly with Hawkins out there. $2.10. And just yesterday, Lauren, one bet of $12,000 on Richmond at $2.10. So there's still that quote. Collingwood at 325. There's a spattering of interest in them. And the other two, well, not so much because they're the outsiders this week anyway. We've got Geelong $5 out to $5.50 and GWS $7.50 out to $8. So, you know, the punters are saying it would be a major surprise if one of those two outsiders were to win their way through. But it's been a season of upsets. It's not over yet.
Yep, stranger things have happened. Absolutely blockbuster weekend of prelim finals this weekend. Jared, we'll catch you next week for a real deep dive on the grand final. Can't wait.
Thanks, Lauren.
Well, that has been the preliminary final edition of the Super Footy podcast brought to you by TAB. Who are you backing this weekend? If you're having a bet, do so responsibly, but most of all, enjoy the footy. We'll see you at the game.
I'm Jen Kelly from In Black and White, a podcast about some of Victoria's forgotten characters. We're celebrating the footy finals with a mini-series about some of the hidden figures from the game's past. Hear the remarkable story of Tom Wills, the champion cricketer who created Aussie rules in 1858 as a way for cricketers to keep fit over winter. And on Thursday, we'll release a bonus episode about colourful Collingwood captain and hero policeman Bill Proudfoot. Tune in to hear the remarkable tale of the day Proudy used his policing skills on the footy field to save an umpire from a violent beating by a mob of angry fans. Search for In Black and White wherever you get your podcasts.